This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Representative Jasmine Crockett. She's a new member of Congress from Dallas and is also a new member of the House Ag Committee. Our conversation with Representative Jasmine Crockett is coming up in a moment. First off, Adina Friedman. She is CEO of NASDAQ. Talks about AI.
At the same time, we have a demographic shift in this country where we know our population is aging, our fertility rates are low. It means the number of working age adults as a proportion of the population will be shrinking. Causes a problem for, like, how do we fund Social Security? How do we generate the kind of economic productivity growth that we need in order to have increasing prosperity? This kind of technological change can help, can be part of the way that we adapt.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by the Honorable Jasmine Crockett, who represents the 30th Congressional District of Texas. It's so good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
Well, welcome to Washington, D.C., and welcome to the House Ag Committee. It's like jumping into the fire, isn't it?
It absolutely is, especially for me. As someone who came in as a legislator, I definitely thought, let me go this way or that way. And I was going for the things that were definitely within my comfort zone. I can honestly say that I am not a green thumb girl at all. So definitely did not think that ag was the place that I would land. But I feel so honored and blessed to serve on the ag committee.
Now, my first opportunity to really see you in action, if you will, was in Waco. At a House Ag Committee listening session. How good was that to be able to just sit back and listen?
No, it was phenomenal, and it's something that most people aren't used to lawmakers or politicians at all ever doing, which is listening. But what most people need to understand is that once we're elected, we don't have superpowers. We don't automatically become omniscient or something. Instead, it is a learning process, and we need to listen. I think that that's probably one of the things we're missing in politics right now is more people just willing to listen to their constituents and find out what are your issues and trying to come up with solutions for those issues. We are supposed to be problem solvers. And so I don't think that it makes sense for me to serve on the Ag Committee knowing that I didn't grow up on a farm, but knowing that I love to eat and not taking the time to kind of listen to every single aspect of farming and agriculture in general in this country and trying to figure out where are their problems and what is it that I can do to solve those problems.
In a way, you come in with no preconceived notions then,
absolutely,
which means you can ask any question and you don't know the answer. Is that that's a positive thing, isn't it?
That is a positive thing. Yeah, I've done more learning on this committee than I've done on my other committee, for sure.
Well, let's talk about the writing of the Farm Bill. We're reauthorizing the 2023 Farm Bill. And as part of that is the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. What are you watching there?
I'm watching to make sure that there aren't even more devastating cuts that take place. What most people don't understand is that SNAP isn't about this image of what you believe a person on SNAP looks like. You know, we have thought about trying to basically reimagine SNAP, right? And showing members of Congress that have benefited from SNAP, whether it was them directly that were receiving the benefits or them receiving them because their parents were on SNAP when they were younger, just so that people won't have kind of this negative notion about it. The reality is that we need it to survive overall. And when I say we, in a developed nation like we are, it is kind of abysmal to say that people should go hungry. We throw away so much food in this country, so no one should ever go hungry. Not to mention when we start talking about rural America and our farmers and what it means for them to sustain their livelihoods. They need to know that this money is in the ecosystem. as well as our grocers, as well as those that provide the products that go on the grocery shelves. They need to know what should we anticipate for the ecosystem. And as we are trying to come out of COVID-19 and people are still struggling, we're dealing with inflation, we're still dealing with supply chain issues. The last thing that we need to do is say, hey, that $6 a day that we've been giving you, we're going to pull that away because we feel like we can balance this really big budget on that $6 a day that hopefully helps you say, you know what, I can go ahead and put the gas in my car so I can get to work because I know that I've got some money on this card so that I can eat. And another thing is that there is this misnomer or misconception that this is just inner city lazy people, they're on SNAP. And the numbers show that more of rural America uses SNAP than inner city America. And so this is an all of us problem, and it touches each of us. And honestly, you never know who the next congressional member will be because a mother was able to sustain herself and her family using these benefits. And so I am looking for my colleagues on the other side of the aisle to really just understand that this is really a humanity thing. This is the right thing to do for people. It's also good business, specifically for our farmers and all of our grocers.
You mentioned $6 a day and putting fuel in a vehicle to travel to the grocery store. There are rural areas that don't have grocery stores and they're 20 miles away. Then there's a place in your district, Bonton, which if you were to get on the bus, I think it's a 3-hour ride, round trip, to get to a grocery store with fresh fruits and vegetables and meat. It's a food desert.
Yeah.
Are you focused on those as well?
Absolutely. So most people don't understand that a lot of the struggles in rural America mirror inner city, lower socioeconomic issues. And so you talk about Bonton and it just lights me up because Bonton Farms is really this amazing kind of bright spot in my district. Right. But the conception for it was the fact that in my district, which is inner city, we experience food deserts. And we know that if there's a food desert, that also affects whether or not you've got positive or negative health outcomes, because our food is our medicine, right? And so it affects whether or not, say, your obesity levels. It affects, and honestly, we know how many illnesses come along with obesity. And so we know that you have a higher likelihood to end up in the hospital. So it's bigger than just the fact that, hey, I've got to eat, you know, Fritos instead of necessarily having an apple. We're talking about your life expectancy. We're talking about my kiddos and the lack of the development, the full development of their minds. We know that food is so much more crucial to those itty bitty minds to make sure that they are learning and maximizing their learning opportunities. And so it's a big issue in rural America as well as urban America. And when we look at it, it comes down to profits, right? And I'm not against anybody making money. I mean, I'm not against that. We live in a capitalist society for sure. But I can't force a grocer to come in when they say, hey, looking at these numbers, we just can't make the profits. We will go under. But there should be other options. And so, you know, we're hoping that we can get legislation passed that would allow for co-ops to be able to invest in themselves and say, you know what, we don't have the money ourselves, but if we can go and get this loan, then maybe we can fill in the gaps and help out in some of these food deserts and better the health outcomes for our communities. That way, we're not relying upon, say, this for-profit organization to come in, this for-profit organization that has never wanted to come in, right? Because if they did, they would have been there. It's crucial. And we know that when you're looking at a food desert, you're also dealing with the health deserts as well as the educational deserts. Like, people end up leaving because they just don't have access to the basics that they need.
It's so exciting visiting with you. so excited that you're a member of the House Ag Committee from Texas. We wish you the very best. Will you come back and see us?
Absolutely.
Again, it's the Honorable Jasmine Crockett. She represents the 30th Congressional District of Texas. Joins us on today's Agribusiness Report.
At Plains Cotton Cooperative Association, our mission is to ensure the long-term profitability of our grower owners through value-added marketing programs and through services to their gins. As a true cooperative, we pay dividends back to our grower owners to financially strengthen their farming operations, whether in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, or New Mexico. Rest assured, at PCCA, we make money for you, not from you.
American agriculture creates millions of jobs, all the while feeding and clothing the world. But with many policymakers so removed from the farm, attacks on farm policy threaten our livelihood and quality of life in rural America. Our strength is our willingness to work together for the benefit of all. That's why business and farm leaders have formed the Southwest Council of Agribusiness to defend the bedrock of our economy and our way of life. This is Larry Combest. The Southwest Council of Agribusiness is at southwest-council.com.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Rob Portman's a former Ohio senator.
I think it's already making a difference. I mean, I think it's already making a difference in industry, some more than others. And as you say, where the financial industry might benefit from more quickly, the manufacturing sector is catching up. A company shared with me that they're using AI for internal skills placement. So, you know, you've got a company of tens of thousands of people and you're trying to get the right person in the right job at the right time and you've got an HR department to do that. AI gives you this enormous advantage to be able to, you know, come up with a database about all of you and figure out who should be where and when. You shouldn't be sitting there. You should be sitting over here. And that's incredibly efficient. And it's about helping people achieve their human potential. So I think it's already happening. And I think that's one reason you see this resilience in the economy that, frankly, has left a lot of economists scratching their head. I will say half the economists who were at this event last year, because I was there, you know, were very concerned about inflation, understandably, and talking about what was going to happen. And I don't think any of them would have said it wasn't more likely than not that we would be in a recession right now. Or by now that we would have experienced one. So I think it's already making a difference. Now, I do think it's a great example we talked about earlier where the private sector, this wasn't government, this was the private sector, you know, being innovative, and we heard from some of those people the last couple of days. What I think we haven't talked about as much today is, you know, sort of the potential downsides and what is the role of government. And government has to be careful not to stifle this, and we're in an international competition. We talked about China earlier, but that's certainly true. But think about it in another way. If there's nobody sort of auditing it, it could both kind of go out of control and have, you know, negative impacts on our economy ultimately and on individuals. And think of the bias or the discrimination that could be in AI as an example. Speaking to a former dean here, maybe a current dean, soon to be a president of Brookings, in the application process. You know, schools are turning to AI. Somebody came up with this database, you know, the algorithm that's being used to determine whether it's going to be you or whether it's going to be you has got certain sort of built-in biases to it, right? And you have to be careful, I think, to have some way to audit that and to verify that this AI is working properly. And that's where Adina mentioned NIST. That's an organization at the Department of Commerce that I believe has the expertise to be able to handle this better than any other single organization. But they don't have the funding. They don't have the expertise right now. And so my view is Congress should act to help NIST to be able to play part of that role.
The Agribusiness Report.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report, and our special guest today, a new member of the House Ag Committee from Texas, Jasmine Crockett. Where is the beef industry heading? Find out firsthand October 8th, 9th, and 10th at the Gaylord Texan Resort in Grapevine. It's Texas Cattle Feeders Association's annual convention featuring John Foley, a former Blue Angels pilot, and mentalist and illusionist Wayne Hoffman. The 2023 TCFA annual convention in Grapevine. Learn more online, tcfa.org.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Making sure students have healthy meals as they prepare for the upcoming school year.
Our broader approach to school nutrition is to show that we're supporting school nutrition operators in every way we can, while also working to move the ball forward on making school meals even healthier and tasty in a measured and achievable way.
Agriculture Deputy Secretary Xochitl Torres-Small with reporters Monday, discussing the Healthy Meals Incentives Initiative and grants announced for school districts reaching students in our nation's highest need schools. The funding from USDA's Food and Nutrition Service is allocated as grants from Action for Healthy Kids. The organization's CEO, Rob Bisegli, explains.
Action for Healthy Kids has awarded $30 million to subgrants to 264 school districts across 44 states.
The awards assisting small and rural school districts with modernization of school kitchen facilities and improvement of nutritional quality of meals. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.